So what I'm going to do basically is, you can't say very much in 15 minutes. On the course, I do a course on producing my pilot, it's about 7 lectures. So it's very difficult to, there's all this stuff I've got in my head, I've got 15 minutes. But the limit is that all I'm going to talk about is what is said in the Pali Sutras. But the Pali Sutras are the only texts we have. Well, there are a few fragments. Where we get a little window on what the historical Buddha might have said. Whether he said it or not is another matter, but this is all we have. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to flag a few ideas, right? And that's about it. So firstly, we'll have a look at the term. Pratitisamutpada is a compound. Now the first thing it strikes you is, grammatically, it doesn't make sense, right? The reason for this is the first member of the compound, praticca, is a gerund. And you can't have a gerund as the first member of a compound. Okay, but I'm just going to have it. But the interesting part is the second member, sam utpada. Now the prefix sam, if you read Macy, I'm joking. Most people think the prefix sam means together, or core. We have conditioned co-arising. And Macy makes a lot of this with mutual conditionality interdependence. But looking at the tradition, the prefix sam also means something to do with an action that is completed. I mean, in the Tiratvandana, we chant sam buddha. So sam buddha there doesn't mean together awaken, it means completely awaken. So the prefix sam also means an action completed. And look at it, Vasubandhu in his Abhidharma Kosha and Chandrakirti in his Prasanapada. Commentators in the Buddhist tradition, what they do is, they say we're like samutpada and they replace it with another term. In both Vasubandhu and Chandrakirti, you replace it with the term Pradurbhava. And Pradurbhava just means manifesting, arising. So it's quite clear, Vasubandhu makes this quite clear, that he takes the term Samvipada as nothing to do with together arising or co-arising. All it means is arising. It's just saying that for the completion of something to arise, conditions are necessary. That's it. So this is debatable. You've got two aspects in the Buddhist tradition. Buddha Gosha takes it as together, Vasubandhu and Chandrakirti don't. Right. So when you read Macy, you must realise you're only getting one half of the story. But it's a good half of the story. I'm getting a proper half of the story. It's actually something's changed. So basically, the first thing is that Pratitisamutpada is the root doctrine of Buddhism, right? And all I'm going to do is throw quotes at you to show how, at least as far as the Pali Sutras go, this is how they see it. Because it's the only doctrine associated with the Buddha's awakening. So the Buddha says, in the Digha Nikaya, I have found the insight, Vipassana, path to awakening, namely Pratitisamutpada. And then it says, and there arose in the Bodhisattva Vipassana. So this is Vipassana, not the Buddha, but all Buddhas are the same, they go through the same experience, so we can attribute it to the Buddha. Insight into things never realized before, knowledge arose, vision arose, awareness arose, and light arose. And then he goes on to say, I've attained to this Dharma, i.e. Pratitisamutpada, which is profound, difficult to see, difficult to grasp, peaceful, sublime, beyond the reach of reason, subtle, and to be fathomed only by the wise. And in another text, the Samyutta Nikaya, the Buddha says, a Tathagata awakens to this condition arising and breaks through to it. Having done so, he explains it, teaches it, proclaims it, establishes it, discloses it, analyzes it, elucidates it. So in here and in other cases where we have some account of the Buddha's awakening, it is always, as far as my reading goes, associated with the doctrine of condition arising. Right. So there's no doubt about the fact that this is a core teaching. It is the only doctrine associated with this awakening. And you don't have to be a deep thinker to see how it works itself out, because every single Buddhist doctrine, right, well, maybe some of those are Tibetan stuff, maybe not, but basic, mainline Indian Buddhist doctrine and practices are all underpinned and are expressions of conditioned arising. I mean, for example, think of the Four Noble Truths. The Fifth Noble Truth is dukkha. So how did dukkha arise? The condition for the arising of dukkha is krishna, or thirst. Third noble truth, the cessation of dukkha, nirvana. How does that arise? The fourth noble truth, the noble eightfold path, or any other path, because all Buddhist paths are nothing more than conditions that are conducive to awakening. So it's very simple, nothing complicated. Some modern people say that, well, isn't the central teaching the doctrine of anatma? But again, you don't have to think very deeply to see that the reason things are anatma, they're without essence, is because they are conditioned arisen. Pratityasamutpada isn't pratityasamutpada because of anatma. There is anatma because things are pratityasamutpada. Right. And the one who just take this, we have the notion of the middle way. And this has come up on Shabbat a while ago, and I don't know if Dr. Chair is here, I don't agree with him. But it's not me that doesn't agree with him, it's the Buddha. You know? Now this quote, I've got another paper. The Buddha says, in a sutra called the Kachana Gotha Sutta, the Buddha says, this world, Kachana, for the most part depends on two views, upon the notion of existence and upon the notion of non-existence. But for one who sees the origin of the world as it really is, with correct insight, there is no notion of non-existence in regard to the world. And for one who sees the cessation of the world as it really is with correct insight, there is no notion of non-existence in regard to the world. All exists, Kachana, this is one extreme. All does not exist, this is the second extreme. Without veering towards either of these extremes, the Tathagata teaches the Dharma by the middle, with spiritual ignorance as condition, karmic formation, quantity, etc. Now the interesting thing is, the word middle way does not appear in any Pali Sutra. This is interesting, because we talk about it, we use the middle way, but it doesn't actually appear in any Pali Sutra. All you get is on about three or four occasions, I teach the Dharma by the middle. So we could say that is the middle way, but it is the middle way because of conditionality. Conditionality is the deeper thing. The reason we could talk about the middle way is because of conditionality, not the other way around. So the root Buddhist doctrine is still not the middle way, but conditionality. And you cannot separate the two. Okay. So the second thing I want to say is also that it extends beyond the Pali Suttas, right? As somebody mentioned, in the Buddhist tradition, the Buddhists do, if you look at Buddhist history, there's a veering towards eternalism and a veering towards annihilationism. So the first veering was the Sarvastivada Dharma. They took the Dharmas as being, in some sense, having an essence, having a swabhava, having an inherent nature. So we get the perfection of wisdom arising because all Buddhist schools arise depending on conditions. And they arose because of this view, right? And they developed the notion of emptiness, shunyata. And Nagarjuna says, I can get it. I think I've lost it here somewhere. Oh, yeah, that's it. So that text that I mentioned where the middle way is defined, the Kachana Gotha Sutta, Nagarjuna, in his Mula Madhyama Karaka, or Root Verses on the Middle Way, he actually uses the same text, not the same text, but the Sanskrit version of the same text. And Nagarjuna actually says, he says, whatever is dependently arisen, by pratityasamutpada, this is explained to be emptiness. That being a dependent designation is itself the middle way. So even Nagarjuna, when he wants to reassert the middle way, the doctrine he uses is pratityasamutpada. Because pratityasamutpada, he takes it further, he's saying, well, you can imply in the doctrine of pratityasamutpada is a notion of lacking inherent existence, which is what shunyata is. So all shunyata is pratityasamutpada, understood a bit more subtly. Now the next thing I want to say is there are, if you look at the text, there are three levels of conditionality. And I think it's important to keep these levels separate. For example, the level of reality, the Buddha says, bhikkhus, whether there be an appearance of or non-appearance of a Tathagata, this determination of nature, this orderliness of nature, prevails. Just this conditionality. And he also says, bhikkhus, that herein which is reality, tathata, not unreality, not other than it really is, just this conditionality, that is called conditioned arising. Now it's interesting, the word I translate this reality is tathagata, which we usually associate with Mahayana. But it finally says, you know, there is nothing in the Mahayana of any deeper understanding than you find in the Pali Suttas. It might be more complicated, more subtle, more mature, but in essence, it is not a representative of any deeper insight. So this is paticcasamuppada as reality, because the Buddha says, and this is the way things are, whether we realize it or not. And he also says, it is profound, difficult to see, difficult to grasp, peaceful, sublime, beyond the reach of reasoning, subtle to be fathomed by the wise. So he's also saying here, this is not something arrived at, as the Buddha said, hammered up by reasoning. It's nothing to do with intellectual insight, no matter how complicated or how deep. Yeah? It's way beyond that. It's seeing things as they really are. But, again, if the Buddha had been Vimalakirti, and when he decided whether he should teach or not, he decided to stay silent, he wouldn't have said anything. But the Buddha decided to teach. So again, if you're going to say anything, and it has to, if you're going to say anything about such a truth, it has to be very, very general. And that's when we come across the principle of paticcasamuppada. And that principle is stated as, when this is, that becomes. From the arising of this, that arises. This not being, that becomes not. From the ceasing of this, that ceases. So this, in a sense, is as much as you can say. Yeah, because you have to say something. So although reality cannot be sort of contained in concepts or words, nevertheless, the only vehicle, or the most suitable vehicle we have of communicating, is to use concepts and images, etc. We have to use words. So when the Buddha uses words, it's just to say, this is as much as one can say really. To take it any further, then you can have problems. So what we have to do is just to fill in the pronouns, this and that. That's all we have to do. You think of anything in your experience, something concrete, and this is how it works. But the interesting thing is, between the this and the that, there's very rarely a kind of rational or logical relationship. The relationship between them can only be seen in experience. It cannot be devised through reasoning. Yeah? But we do have to use reasoning. So then you come to the third level. The third level is paticcasamuppada as formulae. Right? Now there are two kinds of formulae. There's what we call cyclical, and there's progressive. So if you look at the Pali Suttas, there are many, many different formulations of the cyclical or samsaric, as I should call it. Many different formulations of it. And there's also many different formulations of the progressive or nirvanic, as I should call it. Many different formulations. But sometimes people say there are two kinds of conditionality, but there's only one kind of conditionality, just as there's only one kind of gravity. Now what makes the difference between the spiral and the round is the conditions under which you're in the network of conditions. If those conditions are unskillful, you have the samsaric. If they're skillful, then you're on the spiral towards nirvana. So that's the only difference. There's no difference in conditionality. It's just the same law. It's neutral. It doesn't actually favour one or the other. Now this is when the only thing I've got to add is there are certain little difficulties right here. And it is the case that, for some reason, the positive nidana sequences in nirvanic, they seem to have been completely lost and forgotten about. And that what happens is, and it happens within the Theravada tradition and other schools, is conditionality itself becomes identified with samsara. Right? So therefore, nirvana must be something beyond all conditions. And this is what they call the unconditioned. Right? So we just have a look at that. What are the problems, right? So here are things from the Pali Suttas that indicate that whoever wrote this did not have in mind the positive nirvana sequences. They say, this is in the Vinaya, it says, that which is characterized by arising is also characterized by cessation. And in the Digha-nikaya it says, so in the Brahman Prakarasati there arose the spotless eye of Dharma, and he knew, whatever things arise, those things cease. Samyutta Nikaya says, what is impermanent, that is dukkha. And in the Digha Nikaya again it says, whatever has become is conditioned, is conditionally arisen. The deliverance from that is cessation. So basically they're saying here that anything that is conditionally arisen is dukkha, impermanent, and what's the last one? Yeah, conditionally is impermanent, conditioned, and dukkha. Now this can't be the case. You apply those to the positive Madana sequences. It just does not work. Because in the positive Madana sequences you have independence on liberation, arises knowledge of destruction of the asuras, which is liberation, which is nirvana. Right? So that arises in dependence condition. So what you're saying is nirvana is dukkha, impermanent, and conditioned. Right? And they say that, you know, it just does not work. So clearly whoever put these in did not actually have that in their mind. Clearly. It's as if just these things are just being forgotten about. So how can we get around this? Well, it's actually very simple, because the thing about the Pali, it puts them very simply. Right? So for instance, it says, bhikkhus, I will teach you the unconditioned and the path that leads to the unconditioned. And what bhikkhus is the unconditioned? The destruction of lust, the destruction of hatred, the destruction of delusion. This is called the unconditioned. And what bhikkhus is the path leading to the unconditioned? Mindfulness directed at the body. This is called the path leading to the unconditioned. Now in the next following 21 suttas, that phrase is repeated. The only difference is the paths change. Sometimes it's a global path, sometimes it's concentration with thought and examination. So you've got 22 suttas where it makes it very clear that what the unconditioned is the cessation of greed, hatred, and delusion. So unconditioned means a state of mind lacking, where things called greed, hatred, and delusion do not actually arise. Now that isn't some unconditioned, because the Buddha is still, in a sense, pratitya-samuppada goes on, because how does compassion arise in the Buddha? The compassion arises in the Buddha because we are unawakened beings. If there were no unawakened beings, there would be no compassion. So clearly, pratitya-samuppada carries on in the Buddha's mind, but it's unconditioned by greed, hatred, and delusion, or all the factors that could possibly lead to rebirth, unskillful action, etc. So in a way, this is all the unconditioned is. But in the Theravada tradition, because they identify conditionality with samsara, they make another unconditioned. And you look in, say, the Melinda Pana, or questions of King Melinda, it states very clearly that, you know, they've turned the unconditioned into some sort of transcendent realm or whatever, right? It's beyond all conditionality. So clearly, according to the Pali texts themselves, this is just not the case. So this also says, they also say nirvana is permanent. So this conditioned reason, how can it be permanent? Well, it's very simple. It's permanently free of greed, hatred, and delusion. They can never ever rise again. So that's the sense in which nirvana is permanent. So you can see how language is very misleading. It's very, very misleading. You know, so when we're talking about the unconditioned is conditionally arisen. Because the cessation of greed, hatred, and delusion is conditionally arisen. And that is the unconditioned. So we have a kind of, you know, the unconditioned is conditioned. So that's about basically all I've got to say. I would like to say something, because the way I use out of this is the notion of emergence. Because I think emergence solves a lot of the problems one gets in conditionality. But if you want to hear about that, you'll have to come on one of my seminars, I think.